Okay, let's make a start. Good morning to everybody. I appreciate that some people will be flowing in over the next few minutes, getting used to the new system. Well done to everybody that managed to get in so far. I found it pretty seamless. I was certainly, if anybody has any problems, please get in touch with the OU people, with David Hochhauser or the other people at the OU who help. They're incredibly cooperative, helpful, and will help people to sort out any problems. Okay, so today we have a lot of fun, I think, a difficult topic, which we're going to have to try hard to keep clear and focused. But let me give you a little bit of lead up to the next couple of weeks. We have two more shirim after this before Pesach. There will not be a shir on Chol HaMoed, just to let you know in advance. But next week I want to deal with the issue of Erev Pesach, which falls on Shabbos, which of course is this year, for first time for quite some time. That's not just an opportunity to prepare for that situation in a couple of weeks, but it's a good opportunity to review some areas of halacha that don't get spoken about that much, and therefore it's a nice springboard for those other issues in halacha. So that's next week, and 2 weeks from now, I'd like to look at the issue of eating soft, thick matzahs. That's become a little bit more popular now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael, and people are rubbing their shoulders with their Yemenite neighbors and their Sephardi neighbors, and they're asking, why have we in Lithuania and Ashkenazi countries been eating this hard, brittle matzah all those centuries when we could have had this nice, soft, warm, pita-type matzah? We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. But today, we're going to deal with a completely different topic, which is Pesach-related, but not directly about Pesach. I'd like to just start by thanking our donor, our anonymous sponsor, who has sponsored all the shirim for 2021 in the merit of an aliyah for the neshamas of Matasyahu ben Yisrael, for Aaron ben Menachem Leib, and for Eliana bat Yaakov. We are very grateful for that sponsorship, and it should be an aliyah for their neshamas. Okay, today we are dealing with an issue which has been a little bit of what they call a mace mitzvah. What do I mean by a mace mitzvah? Obviously, literally speaking, a mace mitzvah is a body, is someone who has died and has no one to bury them. But sometimes they use the expression in a flipped way, meaning a mace mitzvah could be a mitzvah that people have really forgotten about. It's been a little bit lost in the mists of time, and only now is becoming once again rediscovered. And that is the mitzvah of Chadash. Now, everybody here, I'm sure, has heard of Chadash. I'm just going to put the sheets on the chat for the benefit of the people who may have come in just a little bit later. They're coming up right now. Here they are right now. I'm sure many people have heard of Chadash. We'll define it in a minute. But there's no question that over the past 50 years or so, Chadash has become much more spoken about in a way that it really was not for hundreds and hundreds of years. And in the last 10, 15 years, the chumrah, or maybe we'll see it's not a chumrah, the practice of being concerned for Chadash as a kashrus issue has become much, much more common in Hechsherim and people that are asking those questions. So I think it's really good for us. We've never done this mitzvah before. We've never looked at the issue of Chadash. Let's look at it now, and we'll see what we have to say about it, and hopefully we'll come off the shir much more enlightened. Okay. I'm sure everybody here is familiar with the idea of counting the Omer. We start the Omer from the day after Pesach, from the 16th of Nisan, and we count through till Shavuos. But one of the most important consequences of the Korban Omer, meaning we count the Omer, but that's a count from the beginning of the Korban, we brought a Korban on the sacrifice on the 16th of Nisan. One of the most important consequences of that was it triggered the permission of the new crop. The crops which had taken root up until the 16th of Nisan, whether they were still in the field, whether they were already harvested, were prohibited as what's called chadash, new crop, until the bringing of the Korban Omer. The bringing of the Korban Omer on the 16th of Nisan in the morning triggered the permission of those crops, their permissibility of those crops, which turned from chadash to yashan, to existing old crops, and now they were able to be eaten. Why, as I said before, has this issue of Chadash had a resurgence recently? What's changed? And how, let's try and understand it. It's not a straightforward issue, but it's fascinating both in terms of its halachic analysis, the meta-halachic, hashkafic change that has brought this back into public awareness, and also just the physical reality as it pertains to our crops today, which we'll know a lot more about in an hour from now, hopefully, than we do right now. Okay, let's start. Let's have a look at the sources. Let's start with number one. Quite a lot to do today. The Chumash, when he talks about the Chagim, and we lay this, of course, On the Chagim, number one, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. We learn this usually on the second day Yontif or the second day of Pesach in Israel. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. So God says to Moshe, Daber b'nei Yisrael da'amata aleihem. This is what you have to tell the Jewish people. Ki tavo el ha'aretz. Now that's already an important start. When you come to the land. Now that already sounds like it's a mitzvah that is dependent on the land, on Israel, like Shemitah or Truma. We'll see in a minute whether that's true. When you come to the land, Asher ani noten lachem, which I'm giving to you, uktzartem et ktzira, you'll harvest your crops, v'hevetem et omer reshit ktzirchem, and you'll bring an omer, which is a measurement, a volume measurement of crop, reshit ktzirchem, the first of your new crop, el ha-kohen. You'll bring that to the Kohen, and what will he do? V'heinif et ha-omer, he will wave. It's a wave offering, it's a special barley offering, it's a mincha offering, lifnei Hashem, l'ritzonachem, mimacharat ha-shabbat, he will do this on the day after the Shabbat. That's a phrase which we're not going to dwell on today, but many of you will know it became an extremely controversial issue with the Karaites insisting, and before them, the Baitusim insisting that mimacharat ha-shabbat was the day after Saturday, Shabbat, as opposed to the day after Yom Tov, which is the halacha, it means the day after Pesach. That stricture, by the way, by the Karaites led to a lot of problems, which I'm not getting into now. But on the day after Pesach, they'll take this offering, Yanifenu HaKohen, the Kohen will wave it. V'asikim b'yom anipchem, on that day when they wave the offering, et omer vis omer, kevet tamim, you'll bring also a lamb, a benchen atot, within its year, la'ola Hashem, la'shem. And it'll be an ola, so there's an offering with it as well. U'minchato shnei etzonim soled v'lula b'shemen, and you mix oil with the barley offering as well. Ishe la'shem reich nechoich v'nizkol yayin revir tahin. And a libation of wine as well. So there was a big ceremony, a special mincha offering of the omer, a sheep, oil, wine, etc. Now, here's the key pasuk for our purposes. V'lechem, and bread. V'kali, and kali is flour made from the new grain. The carmel. Carmel is the new fresh grain itself. Lo tochlu, you are not allowed to eat that ad etzem hayom hazeh, until this very day, the day that we do this offering. Ad haviyachem et korban ha'elokeichem, until you brought the korban, you can't eat that. Chukas olam, this is an eternal chok, an eternal rule, ledorotechem, for all generations. Bechol moshvoseichem, wherever you live. And we'll see those last two words are incredibly important and will be analyzed by us throughout the year. So what have we got? We've got this Korban Omer, which permits the eating of the new Lechem, Kali, v'Charmel. Look at Rashi just for a second. In number two, he says, Kali is Kemach Asui Karmel. Karmel is made, is ground up into this flour, which is called Kali. What is Karmel? Karmel is Rach. It's soft grain, shemiyabshin or tobatanur, and they roasted it in the oven and made it into this flour. And the caramel, Rashi explains, hem klayot shikorim grones, shibolin, meaning the new grain. So what have we got? We've got an offering of the new barley crop, which is brought in this way, and that permits the eating of the new crop, we'll see, both barley and wheat and all of the five grains from that day on. What is the moment that permits it? So the posik is slightly ambiguous. It says, when you bring the korban, that permits it. And then it says, etzem hayom hazeh, that very day permits it. We'll see how that works. Let's just define what this covers. Number three, chamisha dvarim chayavim b'chala. This is the first Mishnah in chala. There are five types of grain that are obligated in chala, taking chala from the grain. Hachitim, wheat, sa'orim, barley, kusmin, which is spelt, shibolet, shu'al, which is oats, and shifon, which is rye. Now, I must point out, and I've got to give you a long footnote, which I'm not looking at now, there is a major debate about shibolet shu'al. What exactly is shibolet shu'al? Is it really oats, or is it another crop, some kind of barley? And about 3 years ago, we had a shira on matzah and celiac issues. When we looked at all of these questions, is oat matzah really valid as a matzah on Seder night? I'm not going into all that now. There's a lot of back and forth between the Rabbonim on this and also the agronomists. Professor Felix had a lot to say. He thought that oats were not shibolet shu'al, but you can look at the footnotes for now. Let's assume for now that it's oats. All of these things are the wheat for, are the grain for flour. Hari elu chavim b'chala. They're all obligated in chala, taking the chala from the dough. Umitzarfim zeh in zeh. And you can join them all together. You have a little bit of wheat, a little bit of barley, a little bit. They all join up. They all add together for the shear of chala. But that's not my topic today. The asurim b'chadash. And they are all these fine grains are what's prohibited as chadash. Milifnei ha-pesach, before Pesach. Umilitzor, and they, you're not allowed even to harvest the milifnei ha-omer before you bring the omer. We'll see whether that's true in all places. Now, here's the key. Listen carefully. The im hishuishu kaidem la-omer. As long as these crops are rooted, take root before the omer. We'll define that soon. Okay, ha-omer matiran. Then the bringing of the omer on the 16th of Nisan will allow you to eat them. Anything that's already taken root. The im lav, and if it hasn't yet taken root by that korban, asurim, then that crop remains prohibited. When? Until when? Ad shiyuvah ha'omer haba. Until next year on Pesach. So, if you had a crop that took root, let's say, on, we'll define the date, just too late, we'll define that date in a minute, then you're not allowed to eat that crop until a whole year later. Let's say there's a crop that took root on the 1st of Iyar. It's an easy example, well after the Omer. That crop is off limits. You cannot eat that crop, according to this pasuk, until next year at Pesach. Even if you harvest it, if you put it in the storerooms, the crop remains treif on the Torah level as chadash. Now that's obviously quite serious. If we are harvesting grains that rooted after the Korban Omer, or the 16th of Nisan, then that's going to cause a major problem for us. How do we know that those grains are not in our bread, in our cookies, in our cakes, in our biscuits? That grain apparently is treif until the next Pesach, even if it's been made into a piece of bread. So we'll see how that works soon. What is the basis for the mitzvah of chadash? We'll get into the halacha soon. Look at number four. It says the chinuch, mishar shei ha-mitzvah, the roots of this mitzvah are as follows. Lefi she'ika mechiyasan shel brios hi betzvuos. The bread is the staple of life. Grains are the main thing that sustain us, even to this day. Grain is one of the main focuses of our food experience. Va'al kein, therefore, ra'ui la'hakriv mehem korban la'Hashem asher natnam terem yehenu mehem briyata. Therefore, we have to first acknowledge, before we start eating bread, that the first of our crops goes to Hashem. And he makes a comparison. Okay, mashia amr zichron l'bracha, like we said with brachot, 5 or 6 weeks ago, v'domeh lezeh kol aneni min ha'olam hazeh b'loy bracha ma'al. If you benefit from this world without acknowledging that this world is given to us as a gift by God, that's like benefiting from hekdesh, from a holy material. It's like me'ila. You're abusing the privilege of having this food. And therefore, we have to offer up the omer to say, we acknowledge that our staple bread, the bread that we eat, is from our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Because zeh l'hakshir atzmeinu, this is to, if you like, to improve ourselves, sheni'a ru'in l'kabel mitzvot, so that we're worthy of receiving this great gift. I've said this many times for many mitzvahs, he says, Ubiyom 16th, Yudvav, which we say Tet Zayin, on the 16th of Nisan, Hainu Makrivim, they would offer up Bizman Habayis when the temple was around, Korban Ha'omer. Umitzvua Chadasha Minas Ta'orim, from the new barley crop, Kihia Tzvua HaMevakeret, this is the first crop that grows in Israel, Yosem in Achitim, earlier than wheat, Vehi Materet Kol Ha'atzvus. And this allows us to eat all of the grain. Now, I just point out to you an important point by Rav Yoel ben Nun. Rav Yoel, I was told this by my son, who's a close Talmud of Rav Yoel. Rav Yoel ben Nun pointed out that if you think about the agricultural world back in the times of the Tanakh, by Pesach, what have people got left to eat? They brought in their grain at Sukkot time, and they had a chag, v'samachta b'chagecha, v'ha'isa ach sameach. Sukkot was an enormous simcha, because there's food in the barn, there's money in the bank. All that was left by Pesach was the remnants of whatever they'd gathered in the summer before. So people were really reaching the bottle. They were running on fumes by Pesach. All they had was a little bit of grain left. Ah, but look at all this grain in the field, all ready to go. Yes, but you can't eat it yet. You can't eat it till the day after Pesach. So everyone's looking at all this fresh food, not able to eat it, scratching around to make a little bit of lechem oni. The matzah is lechem oni. Why is it lechem oni? Poor man's bread, because that's all anyone has left. And Rav Yoel points out that there were people who were completely dry, who've completely run out of grain by this time. They may have had grain in the field, but it's chadash, they can't eat it. And that's why the minhag of kimcha de pischa started, that we give people food on Erev Pesach, on the week, 3 weeks, 2 weeks before Pesach, because some people just have nothing left. and all of the new grain was still off limits. It's important to understand that, because then you understand a little bit better what is lechem oni, what is kimcha de pischa, and that also explains why it doesn't say the mitzvah of simcha by Pesach. It says by Shavuot, it says by Sukkot the mitzvah of simcha, but not by Pesach, because Pesach, even though we learn halakhically there is a mitzvah of simcha on the chag of Pesach too, it's not such an easy simcha to have the same, an easy chag to have the same simcha. Fine. So that's how the hashkofa, if you like, behind the mitzvah. Says the Mishnah, number 5, the last piece before we get into the modern day reality. Says the Mishnah in a lot of Mishnayos today, in Menachos, Mishikarav ha'omer, from the minute that they offered the omer, huta achadash miyat. Then they could go straight away and eat chadash. Obviously, you know, it's Chol HaMoed, they might not be able to harvest it, depending on how you learn Chol HaMoed, but whatever they've got, they can eat straight away. The Haruchaikim and people who live far away from Yerushalayim, Mutari Lechatzai Sayom, they could eat their Chadash from noon. Why? Because they assumed by noon they would have brought the Korban Omer, they were Zuizim, they were alacritus in the Mikdash, they didn't waste time. Now, here's us. Mishecharav Beis HaMikdash, now that the Beis HaMikdash is not standing, Hitke Rabban Yochan Ben Zakkai Shiyei Yom Haneif Kula Asur. Now, all of the 16th, the Rabbi Yochanan and Ben Zakkai made a decree after the Mikdash, there was no more Korban, no more Korban Omer, that the whole day of the 16th of Nisan is prohibited, and Chadash becomes... Hello, I don't know if you can see me again. You can still see me? I just disappeared for a second. Can we have a thumbs up if you can see me? I know something slightly strange happened to Zoom, but we're back in action now. I apologize for that. No one can know what's going to happen to the internet. Please keep saying your internet to Hillim, and we will continue. Fine. So the whole day of the 16th is now prohibited. Okay, and we'll see that in Chutz La'aretz that also includes the 17th. Now, just let's summarize, and then we'll look at what happens in the world today. Therefore, based on what we've seen so far, any grain that rooted before the Omer becomes permitted on the, now we'll say the 17th, or in Chutz La'aretz, the 18th of Nisan. What's called rooted, by the way? Rooted, there's a debate in the Mefarshim as to whether rooted takes 3 days, or whether rooted for a crop to root halakhically takes 14 days. And I've brought you in the footnotes who says what. We assume that the halakha is 14 days, and therefore, effectively speaking, anything that was planted by the 2nd of Nisan, if you plant by the 2nd of Nisan, then it will be okay this year. If you plant after the 2nd of Nisan, then you're going to have to wait a whole year in order to eat your crops. That's really the way it works. So what do we do today? Where is, when you eat a piece of cake, when you eat a loaf of bread, where does that grain come from? Does it come from this year's crop? Does it come from last year's crop? When do they harvest? When do they sow? Why are we not running around? Maybe we should be asking the question, where on earth does this wheat come from? Other questions which come up, does this apply to derivatives? What about beer? Beer was made, still is made, from barley. What about whiskey? Now, whiskey is not going to be a problem because by the time it hits your shelf, it's already matured for many years. And don't forget, it will definitely be yashan by the next year. But beer could be a problem. Beer comes on the market quite quickly. Does it apply to them? What about pots and pans and plates and knives and forks that have had chadash on them? Do they become prohibited? How does that work? So we'll answer hopefully all of those questions as we go through. First of all, let's have a look at where does grain grow today? Let's look at the reality. So there's not a lot of grain that's grown in Israel. It's not a big wheat and barley producer these days. Around 92 to 94% of the grain that we consume in this country is imported from other places, Canada, America, etc., which makes chadash potentially an issue as well for us because we get a lot from the outside. Around 1.8 million tons of grain a year is imported to Israel, most half of which is for animal feed. But in Israel, all grain crops are winter crops. That means they are planted in the winter and rooted long, long before the Omer. And therefore, the way that the crop cycle works in this country for any crops here is it's not going to be a problem. Because the crop is rooted, as I said, already way before the Omer. By the time the Omer comes along, it will be 100% yashan and not a problem at all. However, in America, things are not the same, and Canada as well. There are winter crops, and there are spring, summer crops. And I brought you here a little bit of a background as to when, roughly speaking, there's obviously much, much more to it than this, roughly speaking, when the crops grow in America. Rye is, for example, a winter crop, which is usually fine, because they plant it in September, it's rooted long before the Omer, and once the Omer comes along, no problem at all. But barley, oats, and wheat are spring and summer crops, and therefore they are almost always chadash. And if you think about the way the cycle works, if you take, let's say, oats is planted around April, May, and harvested in July, August, so they will harvest it in July, August, it'll be processed, it'll come into the supermarkets around, when? October, that kind of time. And then, therefore, is there a danger zone for chadash through October, November, December, January, February, March, that only when you reach the 16th, 17th, or maybe the 18th of Nisan next year, then that will become permitted. So there's a lot of potentially chadash stuff floating around the market during that season. Of course, if you're coming from the southern hemisphere, it's the other way around. And there, the winter crops are more of a problem. And then there are complicating factors. The date of Pesach changes every year. Pesach can be as early as March 27th and as late as April 25th. So obviously, if Pesach is earlier or later, that will make a difference to whether the crop is rooted in time for the Omer. If we have a late Pesach on April 25th, there's a good chance that the spring crop, which was planted in, let's say, March, will be fine, and it'll be Yashon, not Chadash. But if we have an early Pesach on March 27th, then we'll have missed that period. Also, an icy winter, weather conditions make a big difference. A very cold winter means they have to delay planting. That can make things more like Chadash. A wet spring can also affect harvesting and planting. And even if we know when the crop was planted, in the real world today, grains are often blended. And they're blended in different ways. I did quite a lot of research on this, and I put in the footnotes, we can't go through it all now, different kinds of products, whether it's pretzels or candies or licorice or bread or cereals or cake. You can really read in the bottom of the footnotes there what kind of products are blended in what way, but it's very hard to know what grain goes into a loaf of bread. It's a bit from here, it's a bit from there. They store the grain in silos for many, many years. I brought you even in the footnotes, the total grain capacity of storage capacity in America right now is around 25 billion bushels. Now, that's a lot of grain. Okay, I even brought you what a bushel is there. If you don't know what a bushel is or a peck, and then you can look that up afterwards. But that's a lot of grain. So is that grain, that's all fine. That's yashan. That's been in those storage houses for ages. And therefore, if that gets blended in, it'll be much easier. So you can see already, it's a complicating factor. There are people that write that in the 1970s, this got more political when the Americans entered into a grain treaty with the Russians, and they started shipping out stored grain to Russia, or USSR then, and using the fresh grain for America. That political decision also changed the balance of Chadash and Yasham in the marketplace, etc. You can see already, therefore, that this is a terribly complicated factor. How much thought have you been putting, or have I been putting for that matter, into Chadash and Yasham over the last years? And the answer in my case is not very much. It's never really occurred to me over the years and decades as a major question. And let me tell you why that is. Because let's now look at the main sugya in the Mishnah and the Gemara, and we'll see why it is that certainly the Ashkenazim for the last 500, 600, 700 years have been basically ignoring, I mean the poskim have not ignored it, but the consumer has been basically ignoring this issue and whether that's legitimate today or not. Okay? So hopefully we're clear so far what the issue is. Question Chadash, which is rooted and come after Pesach already, is going to have to wait a year. Are you able to eat that if it comes into your supply? So let's have a look at the mitzvahs now. Actually, the exciting factor here is that there are three different mishnayot which seem to give different messages. And this is one of the reasons why this topic has become so complex, is that if you look at these three mishnahs now, we'll see how they work. Let's look at them. We have to really build this together, and then we'll understand where we all stand. Number 6. Says the Mishnah in Orla. This is an earlier Mishnah in Zrayim, and it's what we call a Stam Mishnah. A Stam Mishnah means there's no debate. There's no opinions. It's just presented as the halacha, and that's usually pretty authoritative. Says number six, Hachadash Oster Min HaTorah. Chadash is a Torah mitzvah. Why have I just been muted? One second. Sorry, for some reason I just ended up muted there. There's some strange gremlins in the system today. I have no idea why that is.
I
didn't get there yet, David. So when I get there, who knows what's going to happen to the Zoom. But maybe you need to highlight me again because I'm not highlighted right now. Okay, fine. So let's get back in again and hopefully not worry about the gremlins in the system. Okay, fine. Let me just share the screen. Just one second. Okay. Fine. Can you all see me and hear me? And can you all see my screen? Yes? Excellent. Fine. We'll persevere. Be'ezrat Hashem, in 3 or 4 weeks, we'll be live. Which, by the way, will be easier in some ways and harder in other ways. Because if we're live and there's a technical problem, then I can't fix it. Because I'm giving the shiur live. But okay, we'll worry about that in 3 or 4 weeks. Okay? Let's not worry about that now. So number six. Let's start again. Hachadash asa min haTorah b'chol makam. Chadash is asa on a Torah basis everywhere. Everywhere. America, England, France. Ha'orla. Orla is also prohibited. Halacha, as a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. By the way, in America that's true. In Chutz La'aretz, orla is also prohibited. The ha'kilayim and mixed seeds of different kinds with divrei sofrim. With the chitkalei kerem, I'm not getting into that now. That's rabbinic mitzvah. So even though we're used to the idea that mitzvahs are tluyos ba'aretz, mitzvahs that apply to agriculture in Israel, like shmita and truma and maisa, only apply in Israel, says this Mishnah in Orla, Chadash is an exception. Also Orla a little bit, Kilayim to some degree, but Chadash is a big exception. And it applies everywhere in the world on a Torah level. If that's the end of the story, then we're all in big trouble, because Chadash is everywhere, and it's treif on a Torah level. Look at number seven. Mishnah in Kiddushin now says, here it presented as a debate. Kol mitzvah shi'i tlui ba'aretz, any mitzvah which is dependent on the land, ein eno heged ela ba'aretz, only applies in the land, like Shemitah, Truma, etc. She'ein tlui ba'aretz, a mitzvah which has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael, mezuzah, something like that, lo heged ben la'aretz ben l'chutz la'aretz, applies everywhere. Chutz, and there's a few exceptions, mina orla, v'kilayim, we saw those before, orla and kilayim apply in chutz la'aretz too, and Rabbi Eliezer omer af mina chadash. Now here, in this Mishnah, it's presented as a machloket. The first opinion, the Tanakama, says that chadash does not apply in chutz la'aretz, only in Israel. Rabbi Eliezer says it applies everywhere. So now what we saw before as a unanimous approach in Orla is now presented as a debate. Where are they getting their ideas from? Look at number eight, just briefly, so we can understand where each side is coming from. It says, Hachika Ama Tanakama, this is what the first opinion understands. Chadash Be'eretz in B'chutz La'aretz Lo. That Chadash only applies in Israel, according to the first opinion. My time of why? Because it says, Moshvo Teichem. In where you live, what does that mean, Moshav? La'acha Yerushav Yeshiva Mashma. It doesn't mean in every place in the world. It means once you've settled the land. Once you've settled, there were 14 years. 7 years of conquest, 7 years of settlement. Then the mitzvah of Chadash applies. Ah, v'asa Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer, who says, no, it applies all over. Then he says, no, av Chadash noheg bein ba'aretz bein b'chutz la'aretz. Why, my timer? Because he says, Moshav is b'chol makom she'atan yoshvim. More like the pshat. The kol moshvot teichem means everywhere, not just after you settle in Israel, but everywhere that you live. So that's the first thing. Now we know why each side says what it says. And then the Gemara says, and Amar Abaya, man Tana, the Paligalei Rebbe Eliezer, who is this opinion, what we call the Tanakama up till now, who disagrees with Rebbe Eliezer? Rebbe Yishmael, it's Rebbe Yishmael. So now we know it's not just an anonymous opinion versus Rebbe Eliezer, it's two individuals, Rebbe Yishmael and Rebbe Eliezer. So where are we holding so far? We have a Mishnah in Orla that seems unanimous. A Stam Mishnah, Chadash applies everywhere. And now we have a debate in Kiddushin between Rebbe Eliezer, who says it applies everywhere, and Rebbe Yishmael, now we know who it is, who says it applies only in Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to get into all the technicalities, but what you seem to have here is what's called a Stam V'Achar Kach Machlokas. There's first a Stam Mishnah in Orla, and then later there's a Mishnah in Kiddushin, which comes later, which has a debate, which usually means that the Stam Mishnah is not as straightforward as we thought. Often a Stam Mishnah is authoritative, but when there's a debate afterwards, like here, maybe it's not. There are other counter pressures the other way. Orla is much more to do with mitzvahs, tachlius ba'aretz, and kiddushin is much less, but I put that in the footnotes. And then finally, we have a Mishnah in Menachot. You have to put all these together. The Mishnah in Menachot says as follows, number 9. Kol korbonus had siba. This is why it's great to learn this, because we don't often learn this material. Kol korbonus had siba ve'yachid v'ayimin ha'aretz u'michutz la'aretz. If you bring a personal korban, then you can bring it from anywhere. You can bring a sheep from Greece, from Italy, and you can bring it up as a korban. That's fine. Okay? Min ha'chadash u'min ha'yashan, or you can for this year's crops, last year's crops. Chutz min ha'omer, but the korban omer and the shtei ha'lechem, the special two loaves that are brought on Shavuos, einam banim ela min ha'chadash u'min ha'aretz. They have to come from the new crop, and they have to come from Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara in number 10, which I'm not going to read inside, because I just want to move on a little bit, the Gemara makes an equation and says, wow. So the view that says that the Omer has to come from Israel must hold that it only applies in Israel. And the view that says that the Omer can come from outside, you can bring wheat from somewhere else, they're the ones that hold that the Chadash applies even outside Israel. So this Mishnah in Menachos is not clear, meaning you could argue different directions, but it sounds a little bit like it's saying that you can only bring the Omer from Israel because Chadash only applies in Israel. So I brought you a summary of that. There's the Mishnah in Orla that clearly says Chadash applies everywhere. There's the Mishnah in Kiddushin which gives one way and the other way. And there's the Mishnah in Menachos which implies that Chadash only applies in Israel. What are we going to do with that? So there's briefly speaking, there's two Gemaras, and then we can get into what the Psak is. These two Gemaras. First of all, there's a Gemara in Menachos on this Mishnah where there are three opinions brought about people who ate Chadash in Chutz La'aretz, or when they ate Chadash, when they allowed themselves the privilege of eating Chadash in Chutz La'aretz, if they were in Bavel, and one says on the 17th, one says on the 18th. I'm not getting into all of the details. It will take us a little bit off topic. But bottom line, this Gemara presents three views, two of which, two out of three, understand that Chadash does apply on a Torah level in Chutz La'aretz. So the Gemara, here at least, seems to be weighing in the direction that Chadash does apply outside Israel. And again, that's going to cause us problems. Once we say that Chadash applies in America, then we're going to have to go searching our Hechsherim much more thoroughly to work out whether the bread, the cake, etc. is allowed to be eaten. The Yerushalmi goes in the same direction. The Yerushalmi goes in the same direction and says not only that, but it says that Chadash is not only something that applies in Chutz La'aretz, but he says, have a look here, he brings the view of Rebbe Eliezer, my mekaimim rabbanal matamid Rebbe Eliezer, b'chol moshvoisechem, b'chadash, shekein yatsa l'chutz. Okay, actually that's the next opinion. The previous, let's just go back, sorry, I misled you there. My tamid Rebbe Eliezer, what's the reason of Rebbe Eliezer? B'chol moshvoisechem, b'chol makam bein ba'aretz, bein b'chutz la'aretz. Fine. That's Rebbe Eliezer's opinion, we knew that from the discussion before. So then, Rebbe Yonah by kumi de Rabbi Yossi. So Rebbe Yonah asked the question, lama lo tanin en af chala imahem? Why didn't we turn around and say that chala even applies in Chutz La'aretz as well? Why not chala as well? So amalei, no. Loi asin masni ela davar shehu noyig bi Yisrael ube goyim. What's going on with this Yerushalmi? This Yerushalmi is saying that unlike chala that doesn't apply by non-Jews outside of Eretz Yisrael, if a non-Jew makes bread, they don't have to take chala. Only if a Jew makes bread. Chadash, according to the Yerushalmi, sounds like it applies, not only applies in Chutz La'aretz, but even applies to non-Jewish crops. Crops by non-Jews. Crops which are made into bread and cakes by non-Jews. Also, Chadash also applies to them as well. So what you've got here, I hope you've been able to kind of see that even though we've got a debate here, it seems to be moving in the direction of a stringent approach. You've got a Sam Mishnah that says it applies all over the world. You've got an opinion in Kiddushin that says, and both of these Gemaras, both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, seem to imply or even state explicitly that Chadash applies outside Israel as well, and maybe even to the produce of non-Jews. And therefore it's not surprising when you look at the main halachic psak. How do we pass in halacha? This is actually a good structural question. When you have Gemaras that have all sorts of different opinions in different directions, Who do we follow? So generally speaking, we look to the Rishonim, the main Rishonim, the Rif, the Rambam, Tosfos, Rashi, the Rosh, etc. And we say, well, which way, how do they read the Gemara? And as is, I think, well known, the Shulchan Aruch has a principle that if he can find a majority opinion within the Rif, who is Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi from Morocco in the 11th century, the Rambam, who of course, as you know, is Maimonides from North Africa in the 12th century, and the Rosh, who is from Germany and then Spain in the 13th century, says, if I can find two out of three of them that agree, that's going to be the halacha. So we're always looking to see what does the Rif say, the Rambam say, the Rosh say, and then we're looking around other people. Well, let me tell you the good news, or maybe it's the bad news. We'll see. Everybody on that list that I've just mentioned, pretty much, says that Chadash applies in Chutz La'aretz. The Rif and the Rambam and the Rosh and the Tor. Have a look in number 13 briefly. The Tor is the son of the Rosh. Isser zen noeg bein bizman habayit. This Isser of Chadash applies not only when the temple stands, bein shaloi bizman habayit, but also when the temple is destroyed. Bein ba'aretz, whether it's in Israel. Bein b'chutz la'aretz, whether it's in Chutz La'aretz. Bein b'shel Yisrael, whether it's Jewish. Bein b'shel Nochri, or whether it's non-Jewish. You can't get more clearer than that. You can't get clearer than that. And therefore, it will come as no surprise to you that the Shulchan Aruch rules unequivocally, at least the Bet Yosef does, we'll see, that Chadash is prohibited min ha-Torah all over the world. Not just in Israel, but in Chutz La'aretz as well. I brought you in number 14, the Bet Yosef. The Bet Yosef goes and he brings from different places and he says, I just don't understand how people can be lenient on this. All of the major Rishonim, almost all of the major Rishonim, we'll see the exceptions in a minute, lean very heavily or say explicitly the Chadash applies all over the world, and he says it's astonishing that there are people that cannot keep this, etc. Look at the end, he says Devarav Tmuim, their words are amazing. Rayasav Ein Behem Mamash, they have no proofs. And unsurprisingly, let's look at the Shulchan Aruch here, 15 and 16. The Shulchan Aruch brings this halacha in two places. Number one, at the end of the laws of Pesach, which makes sense, and number two, in Yoredeah, when he's talking about prohibited food, trade, kosher, etc. Look at what he says, 15 and 16. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Asa le'echol chadash, af bizman hazeh. You're not allowed to eat from the new crop, even this year, even this in these times. Bein lechem, it doesn't matter whether it's bread. Bein kali, or grain. Bein caramel, roasted grain, flour, etc. Ad chilas leil yud ches benisan, until the beginning of the 18th, in Chutz La'aretz, or Beretz Yisrael, ad chilas leil yud zayin benisan. So, it's prohibited, until that date. 16 in Yoredeah, he says, you can't eat chadash from any of the five grains, which we talked about before. Until they bring the korban omer on the 16th of Nisan. Shnei Omer, and he brings the posuk. The ha'idna, and today when we have no korban, leka omer, there is no korban. Then also kol yom tetzayin, it's also the whole of the 16th, and only permitted on the 17th. Ubechol, and in Chutz La'aretz, she'osim beis yamin, they keep 2 days always. Asa Kol Yom Zayin, it's also Asa on the 17th, at Chilat Leil Yud Chet. And he says here in Bet, Asa Chadash, Itza Chadash, the prohibition of Chadash, Noeg Ben La'aretz, Ben L'chutz La'aretz, Ben B'shel Yisrael, Ben B'shel Oyvedet Kochavim. Fine. So that should be the end of the discussion, right? Nobody is allowed to eat Chadash. Everybody seems to agree that Chadash, if you have a grain which was rooted later than the 16th of Nisan, then you can't eat it for a whole year. So why then has everybody been lenient? This is an astonishing sugya, because the halacha could not be clearer from all of the primary sources, and yet for the last 700 years we'll see the Ashkenazim have been lenient, we'll see why. This is really the next part of the shiur, there are five or six reasons why Chadash has been off the menu, if you like, in terms of an issue, for the last 500 or 600 years. Let me take you through them, because these are fascinating. They bring into the discussion the reality of people living in these places. We'll see them right now. Have a look here. First of all, the Or Zarua. The Or Zarua, who was living in Vienna in the 13th century, he already raises this and he says, look, what can we do? We really can't live without Chadash. Number 17. But so hail the Hamishnayas for Hatanaim Chalukim. Look. The Mishnais don't agree with each other, which we saw, and the Gemaras don't agree with each other, the Mishnais, the Tanaim, the Dava, the Chazina, Nami, Amoraim, the Gemara also, he says, the Ikka, the Avdi Hacha, there are different opinions. Ah, yes, there's a clear kind of indication, but no, there's different opinions. V'loy itma hilchas aloy kamar v'loy kamar. He says, I read these Gemaras as saying that it didn't come to a clear conclusion. That's how he reads it. Even though that's not how the Rambam, the Rif, the Rosh read it. He says, no, there's definitely a debate. The ikka shas hatchak, and we live in a time of great need. The ef shalan shaloi liknoi tzvur min ha'akam. We cannot avoid buying grain from non-Jews. We're not allowed to own land. The Jews were not, often not everywhere, allowed to own their own land in the Middle Ages. So what choice do we have? We have to buy grain from the non-Jews. Islan lismoch al stam mishnah, we have to rely on this, these other mishnahs that say it's permissible. Va'atanayim va'amorayim, the sabri chadosh, chutzlaritz derabbonon. We have to go with the opinion that chadosh in chutzlaritz is derabbonon. But like chayshin is fake, and because now it's a sophic derabbonon, you're allowed to eat it. What does that mean, a sophic derabbonon? He's saying that we don't know for sure that the grain that we're buying from the local non-Jewish market is chadosh. Maybe it's Yashan. Maybe they mixed it. Who knows? And since it's a suffix, and we're going to rely on the fact, the minority opinions, that either it doesn't apply or it's a rabbinic mitzvah, suffix, the rabbonon, lekula. And therefore, we have no choice. We have to eat the grain, and therefore, we have to just not worry about it. That's one approach. The Taz, who's obviously a lot later, he picks on this same idea of the Ozarua, and he makes another point, and he says, we've got nothing to, not only we've got nothing to eat all winter, unless we buy grain, but we've got nothing to drink. What are we going to drink? You didn't drink the water. If you drank the water in those days, you didn't have long for this world. All the wine was treif. Yeah, Jews didn't have vineyards. They didn't make wine. The only thing anyone could drink was beer. And if the beer is chadash, then we're all going to die. We can't live without our beer. And it's not just like the English kind of, the English can't live without their beer, which is sure. Every time you listen to these discussions about lockdown in England, it's always, when are the pubs going to open? Because we can't live without beer. Here, we're not focused on that, but we're focused on the reality. Look at the task. In Kain Yesh Lanu Ladun Baloyma Debin Midas Elu, in our countries, Shehus Shaf Hadchak, it's a real emergency here. The Chayav Shal Adam Taloy B'Shtia Sheikha Toyrim. Our very lives depend on drinking malt beer. And if that was a good quote for you to put for Purim, our very lives depend on drinking malt beer, he says, but they did then, with Shibolet Shul and eating oats. Kedai hu atana kamalis mochalav, we have to rely on the lenient opinions. B'shat hachak, we have no choice. Kevin Deloy istik halacha, since it's not 100% clear in the Gemara, but Feirush, clearly, explicitly, the Gemara to Rabbi Lezer. We don't know for sure that Rabbi Lezer is the halacha. Again, against the Rambam, against the Shulchan Aruch, etc. Now, this lenient position was opposed by many. The Shach opposed it, the Vilna Gaon opposed it. I brought you all the references there in the sheet. Fine. There is another discussion, which I'll just get into briefly now, that says maybe beer is not included at all. Maybe liquid derivatives from Chadash are not included in Chadash. And the Aruch HaShulchan raises it here in number 19, but he kind of dismisses it and he says, that's very schwach, that's very weak to argue that, and he doesn't think it's true, although we'll see later, he also feels that we have no choice but to be lenient. But the beer issue, he says, is not going to help us very much. The Vilna Gaon is quite lengthy on this, and he's very, very strong. Look at some wording of the Vilna Gaon. The Chadash has to be prohibited. Look here. The Chayim Perish Kolach Chiburim Arishonim. Look at all of the Rishonim. Everything they write, pretty much everyone said it was prohibited. Or the like of Sefer HaTrumas, not like the Sefer HaTrumas, which you'll see in a minute. Or Kfar Tamar Rosh Alav, people already were amazed at that then. Or Kasav, the Sam Mishnah, Besoif Orla Kavasi, the Rebbe Yezer. Fine, the Sam Mishnah follows Eliezer. The Divrei Bahag, and we didn't look at the Bahag, but he brings the Bahag. Tars Godelhu, it's just a complete error, he says. Vein Tzarech Lahashiv Aleim, I don't even need to talk about it. Doesn't deserve commentary. The Gam Mashik is of the Shem HaBach, and the Bach, we'll see the Bach in a minute, because she's Satsoi, Eina Noi B'Shel Oide Kachovim, he says that it doesn't apply with non-Jews. Kfar Hako Al Taktodah, they've already smacked him on the head. Strong language. That's already been knocked out of the play. Kala Achroni V'Shkaga Yalta Mitzakos Yado, he made a clear mistake. V'Toiva Havaleila V'Hag Tan Hashdika, and the people who are saying this stuff should have kept quiet. But Gaon's very unhappy about it. But at the end of the day, all of the Ashkenazim were lenient. Other reasons that they were lenient. The Sefer HaTrumas, not the most mainstream of Rishonim, certainly not compared to the Rambam, the Rosh, the Rif, etc. He wants to say, I'll just read this outside, the Magen Avraham writes in here, he wants to say that maybe Chadash only applied in Chutz La'aretz on a rabbinic level, and maybe only in countries close by to Eretz Yisrael. We see this, by the way, with Truma. There are halachas of Truma on a Drabbanon level applied to the countries surrounding Israel, to Egypt, to Syria maybe. He says the same I think is true of Chadash, that when they said it applies in Chutz La'aretz, they didn't mean in America, they didn't mean in Canada, in Europe. They meant it applies a little bit around Israel, but where we come from, it doesn't apply. And he says, that's the basis on which we're lenient. The Magen Avraham brings it, but at the end he says, the chol, aval bal nefesh, if you want to be careful, yachmir, then you really have to be machmir. Okay? The last two reasons why people are lenient, and this I think is one of the most important. Look at the Ramah. This Ramah will inform our practice today a little bit. The Ramah, where did the Ramah live? He lived in Poland in the 16th century. Look at the Ramah. After the Shulchan Aruch said, Chadash is offer everywhere. Non-Jewish, Jewish. Mikol makom, kol stam tfuah shari. He says, I still think you can go to the market and buy regular grain. Shari la'acha Pesach, as soon as Pesach's finished. Why? How do I know it's not from grain which is chadash? Mikoch sveik sveika. He says, I think you've got a double sofek. And this is quite a famous sveik sveika, a twofold doubt. Sofek hi mishana sha'avra. First of all, I don't know whether the grain was from last year or this year. And I can't tell. There's no packaging in those days that can inform you. The intim salima mishana zo, and even if you want to argue that it's from the, you're shopping in August, you want to tell me it's from this grain, mikol makom dil manisha shekaydem ha'omer, how do I know that it didn't take root before the omer? So I think you can be makul, you can be lenient. Now, and this is very important, ubemine tzvur shezorim vaday la'acha pesach, if you know for a fact that the grain was only sown later after Pesach, then I don't think you can rely on this leniency, because you know it was sown this year. Unless they're all mixed up and the grains are blended, and grain comes from elsewhere, she's zoring code in Pesach. And what about very cold countries? He's living in Poland. Now, Poland is cold enough, but Russia is even colder. What about really cold countries? They just have no choice but to sow after Pesach. You have to be a bit more careful then. But, and here's the key at the end, but if you're a Rav, be very careful. Don't pasken this to other people. Don't tell people that they're not allowed to eat Chodesh. But when people have to live on beer, people have to live on grain, why? Because at the end of the day, people won't listen to you. Better they should at least sin ignorantly than sin willingly, because people's lives depend on this. Now, he tries to find ways to halachically say that it's probably okay, it's a double doubt, etc. But even that was kind of knocked out by many of the later Mephoshim. But he says at least you shouldn't tell people the halacha, because they're likely to ignore it, and then they're going to be sinning in an intentional way. Let me throw in a couple of other factors that you may not have thought about. Says the Rosh, in the few areas where the Jews owned land and could produce grain, they were harvesting grain and sowing grain. Actually, probably in the North Europe, they were sowing grain around Easter time, and they said there were terrible pogroms, and often the Jews were hounded out of their farms, and they were not even able to plant because of the pogroms around Easter. And then, says the Rosh, you have the problem with the non-Jews. The non-Jews, the Catholics in Europe in the 12th, 13th century, they would not plant during Lent. Now, not only do you need to know when Pesach is, but now you need to know when Lent is. Now, for all of you out there who don't know when Lent is, who didn't have the benefit of a good Catholic education, Lent runs from Ash Wednesday through to Easter. And the Ash Wednesday can be as early as the beginning of February. It can be as late as the middle of March. And therefore, if non-Jews are not planting during Lent, so you also have to work out when the corn, the grains were planted by then. Now, obviously today, I don't think anybody's bothered about Lent, really, in terms of the agriculture. But this is just one of the things that they have to deal with. Okay, the last main leniency, and then we'll kind of summarize and see where we are today, is the Bach. The Bach wants to say that it must be that even if Chutz La'aretz is included in Chadash, it cannot apply to grain grown by non-Jews. It can't. And he brings proofs. And I just brought you a tiny snippet here. The Bach is pages and pages long, where he goes at length to try and prove that Chadash only applies to Jewish grown and harvested crops. It can't apply to non-Jewish. And he says, and I ran this argument past the greats of the great, the greatest of the great in 16th century Poland. He talks about the Maharal and the Maharshal and Rav Sholem Shachna. And he says, and they agreed with me. And I'm not just making this up. The minhag of Lithuanian and Polish Jewry throughout the last 700 years has been that they just don't, they're not concerned by this because they have to find some way to allow it. And his way, he says, is that wants to say that non-Jewish grown grain is not included. And he says, be aware that you shouldn't paskin against this. Look at the last few lines here. Ulachain ein l'shum god l'hoira t'hoira l'issa hetach ha-minhag. Don't go messing with our minhag. We have a minhag, Ashkenazim. Don't get up as a frum rabbi and say, I think the minhag is wrong. Shenagu al-pi g'dayli Yisrael. Because our minhag is based on hundreds of years of affirmation by the greatest of the rabbis. Lahatir, we are lenient. Mishe rote l'achmir, if you want to be strict, la'atzmo for yourself, midat chasidas, and you want to be extra strict on yourself? Minas chasidus who? That is an extra stringency. The lo yare la'acherim, don't you dare tell anybody else that they should do that. The lo leisi le'atzuni, okay? The intui, it's going to be a disaster if people do this. They're just going to ignore it. The daske b'misha hurdu b'shar precious. And I don't even think you're allowed to be machmir unless you're the kind of person who is on a level spiritually where this kind of chumrah befits your religious life. That you're known to be a chassid, only such a person, Rishai Linhagle, is a gam bazaar. So the Bach is very strong. The Bach says, not only do I not want you messing with our minhag is to be lenient, but I don't even want you to take on this as a stringency unless you're absolutely confident that this matches your religious level. Otherwise, he says, this is a stricture which could lead to terrible places. People will mamash not be able to eat, and therefore they will break the Torah intentionally. The Bach sounds very convincing, but again, was very strongly opposed by the Shach, by the Taz, by the Gon, the Chidah, Pnei Yeshua, Shagas Aryeh, and many, many others. Interestingly, it was defended by the Hasidim. There were many Hasidim in the 18th and 19th century who were lenient on Chadash. There are a few reasons why that is. There is a story, and this is where we get into Hasidish stories. You know what they say about Hasidish stories? If you don't believe any of them, you're an apikiros. And if you believe all of them, you're a bit foolish. But here we are. Chassidish story that the Baal Shem Tov dreamt one night that a heavenly voice came out to him and said that the halacha is like the Bach. And therefore the Chassidim may not be stringent on this issue. Even though he himself, according to other sources I put in the footnotes, became stringent later in life. Nevertheless, the Chassidim were often lenient. Also the Chayzer of Lublin. The Chayzer of Lublin said that he was a direct descendant of the Bach, and therefore he felt the Hasidim should be lenient on this issue. Also, the Bach, hundreds of years before Hasidus, was also the Rav both of Mezhebuz and also of Belz, interestingly. And therefore, could be that they felt this connection a little bit with the Bach. However, other people were not convinced, I must tell you, that the Orach HaShulchan, I brought you in number 24, I haven't got time to read it all the way through, but he said, look, I can't really see this Heta. On the other hand, we won't eat for 6 months a year if you impose this on people. Just pick up a couple of lines that he says here at the end. Even though he feels it's very weak as a heter, kama kasha aleinu lahamtin shmoi lechadashim. How terribly difficult is it for us to wait 8 months? Machilas chitin soerim shibon ishel to eat our grain. We can't do that. Shemize oisin groitin, we make our oatmeal. Vze kol achilaseinu mishtiyat sheicha kol achoyres. This is all we eat and drink during the winter. Rak yechidim, only individuals. Okay, has a hearim bazeh who are careful in this. V'kasha aleihim kaidu, and it's very hard for them too. V'lechein kama gedoy lechach me'Yisrael v'limtza he'terim. And he says at the end, v'ein yigzoru al medina tarachoykos k'shalanu sh'tzivich v'lahamtin yosi nechetzi shana. Don't try and impose on us that have to wait all of these months. Mizman ha'katsir, java she'ein atzibu yechodin la'amad bo. Because you cannot impose something that the community cannot cope with. The Mishnah Brura, and here I give him the last word on this section, the Mishnah Brura agrees that the minhag was to be lenient, but he encourages people to be stringent as much as they can be. And he very importantly, he says it's not an all or nothing approach. Meaning, if you can be strict on this crop, but you don't know about that crop, then that's better than nothing. He says, just because you're strict in this area, maybe you can be lenient on the plates and the pots and the pans and the beer. And he basically encourages people to not just ignore it, but try and do whatever they can. Like Moshe Feinstein, for example, picked up on this, and he himself was stringent on oats, because he said it was possible to be stringent on oats, but he was less strict on other things. Let's bring this now into the final lap, contemporary authority. What do we do today? Let's sum up in the last 5 minutes and try and understand where this leaves us today. Most Ashkenazi authorities through the 20th century were lenient in practice on Chadash, because we saw all of these Heterim based on this minhag, quote, which is clearly a minhag, that the Ashkenazim were lenient. This was the position of Rav Yitzchak Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik. This was the position of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who, although he himself was stringent where he could be, nevertheless did not impose Chadash on other people, and ate from food which was made by Hechsherim, under Hechsherim, where Chadash is not one of the issues that they check, which is still the case with many Hechsherim. However, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was particularly concerned about this, and started a whole movement in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, to be more stringent with Chadash, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Rav Soloveitchik's son-in-law, and here in the Gush, was particularly strict on Chadash, and felt that in the last few decades, it's much easier for us to tell. First of all, we can tell products, there's better labeling, we know where things are coming from. Second of all, we can't just run the classic arguments of Eastern Europe. What did they say? They have nothing to eat, and they have nothing to drink, all through the winter. So that's not the case for us. We have many other products, Baruch Hashem, we have many other drinks, we have many other sources of food. Just to turn around and say that we have a minhag as Ashkenazim to be lenient seems a little bit difficult to rely on, say these other authorities, in a time when really the reason for the minhag doesn't apply. In another context, Rav Hirsch, nothing to do with Chadash, but Rav Hirsch taught that a minhag is a little bit like a korban, like a sacrifice. It's very holy, but if it's left too long and it passes its sell-by date, it becomes noisar. It becomes left over, which is chayv kores. He says, and therefore check that your minhagim are not now out of place, because what was appropriate in the 16th, 17th, 18th century may not be appropriate now. He wasn't talking about chadash, but that's an interesting point on minhag. Also, don't forget Rabbeinu Tam wrote that minhag, when it's spelled backwards, is gehenim. And therefore, not every minhag is something just to be quoted. You have to work out whether it goes forwards or whether it goes backwards. Almost all Sephardi authorities were strict. I brought you some exceptions. In Eretz Yisrael, they're very strict to this very day. In Chutz La'aretz, I brought you here the OU. This is an OU share. I have to put the OU first. I brought you some links. Many OU products now are certified as Chadash free. I brought you the OK. I brought you the Sarkei. I brought you a reference there to the Guide to Chadash, which was produced by Rav Yosef Herman, who was a pioneer in Chadash awareness, who died a few years ago. And in practice, there are now more and more Hechsherim that are makpid on Chadash. Let me just finish with an interesting observation. I think it's an interesting observation. I brought you also in the sheets many references to other articles. There's some excellent articles on Chadash. But there are two articles in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society. This is a very good, thorough journal, very fair-minded, very balanced. There are two articles on Chodosh. One of them in 1982, by Rabbi Alfred Cohen, who was one of the founders and editors of the journal, and one of them in 2017 by Rabbi Yehuda Schwitz. Both of them excellent articles, but they have really quite different conclusions. In 1982, and you may identify with this, Rabbi Cohen, you know, puts both sides of the argument and says, look, Chodosh is very serious, and it seems to apply according to most poskim in Chutz La'aretz, but he says, the minhag of Ashkenazim is to be lenient, and he bemoans the fact that children who go off to yeshiva and learn Torah come back and now their parents' homes are no longer kosher enough for them. Their parents who follow the classic Ashkenazi minhagim and they're not particular about Chadash, the children are now frummer than the parents, and he says this is a terrible thing and it's not Darchi Noam. Judaism is not meant to create machlokas And the children have to understand that even if they want to be overzealous, there's no place for that in terms of kibbud av va'eim. He ends the article with a whole analysis of that. 35 years later, in the 2017 article, Rabbi Spitz has a very different conclusion. He says, look, you know, at the end of the day, all these leniencies are really excuses. And each of them has a response, and okay, there are people who are lenient, and he accepts that, but at the end of the day, he clearly encourages you to be strict. Now, what changed between 1982 and 2017? So a few things changed. One thing which changed is that the product awareness now is much greater, and there are other sources of food, and it's perfectly right that we should be more aware of Chadash, because we can be. But what also changed is that those overzealous children from 1982 became the rabbi setting halachic protocol in 2020, and the generation that Rabbi Cohen felt was perhaps not as respectful enough to their parents, now is a generation that's in charge. So which of those two things is more of an issue? I'll leave you to ponder and think about in your own time. But at the end of the day, just to summarize, I think that Chadash is definitely an idea that should be on the agenda. We should be aware of it. In Israel, it doesn't become a problem in terms of local products, but imported products still are. I'm not suggesting that people should be strict on it. You have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, but at least you need to be aware of it. And maybe in the future, as production techniques change, we'll be able to keep this mitzvah, which at the end of the day is a Torah mitzvah to be aware of. We'll be able to keep it better and better and connect with, as I said at the beginning, this mace mitzvah, this mitzvah which has been a little bit neglected, but now hopefully is a little bit clearer. So I hope that what we did over the last hour was clear, and Baruch Hashem, the internet held up. Next week I'd like to talk about the issue of Erev Pesach and Shabbos, which is going to take us into all sorts of areas. But between now and then, I wish you a good week, a healthy week. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you for persevering, getting into the shir. I hope it was worth it. And please God, we'll meet again next week. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All the best. Have a great day.
Thank you.